Good morning. Welcome to our Planning You Can Trust podcast, presented in collaboration with Chatterton & Associates. I'm your host today, Shauna, and I'm a part of the Planning You Can Trust team. Real quick, what we like to do over here is help build brands and make visions kind of become a reality. And the podcast today is one of those visions becoming a reality. So we're pretty excited about it. Excited to have Rob here today, who's the founder and financial planner at Chatterton & Associates. Rob.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
We're excited. So how are you feeling on your first official podcast?
I feel like technology is coming up.
Yeah.
I remember listening to radios, and now it feels like podcasts are replacing that. But yeah, I'm excited.
Should be fun. So obviously, we're grateful to have you, and we're going to go into a topic that is near and dear to your heart. I know a lot of these topics are. So we want to get started, and maybe you can share with us a little bit about your story and your background.
Sure. Okay, so growing up, my father was an attorney. He loved trials. He was a district attorney for 26 years, defense attorney for 10 years. So he loved the courts. I would say growing up with my dad being our sole income, his income was pretty good. We lived the really good lifestyle. Growing up, we were involved with our country club. We took vacations. We had a cabin in Big Bear. I want to say my dad basically loved his Porsche. He always had a new Porsche. So he was a great income, but not a great saver. I would say saving was not in his blood at all. And then when I was about sophomore in high school, my mom and dad got a divorce. Mm-hmm. At that point, my mom was on her own, didn't understand anything about finances, and asked me to get more involved. So as a sophomore in high school, I started getting more and more involved with my parents' finances, and I was fascinated with investments. My mom and dad had more of a wirehouse financial advisor that was more of an annuity salesperson than I would call it relationship person. So I kind of got more involved when I was 24, and then I took over all of their finances. And that continued all the way up until my dad passed away, you know, back in 2006. So what was interesting with our household, with my dad being a trust attorney and myself being a financial advisor, my dad never really even had a trust. It was kind of fascinating. He thought of the courts. Okay, so probate was something you really wanted to avoid because it ties up in courts for 2 years. Well, when your dad lives in court, he doesn't view that as bad. He thought that was actually more normal. And a lot of his friends thought it was normal. So they thought that the probate system was good because it limits the time creditors can go after the estate to 90 days. In a living trust, it's 2 years. So there is some negatives with that. So my dad refused to get a living trust until my brother was diagnosed with schizophrenic, bipolar, and he had cancer of the pancreas and liver and had 3 months to live. So as a result, we knew we had to take care of my brother. So he did set up a living trust. So as a child growing up in our household, we never really talked about finances. I knew my dad was successful, but I would say it was more, we never just talked about finances in general.
Wow. It's a lot of responsibility for a kid, and I think they're incredibly lucky to have you. How do you feel that money is being talked about differently in society today?
Well, today, I would say, so I have three kids. I have a junior in high school, a freshman in high school, and then a third grader. Today, finances are really not taught in school. I would love to tell you my kids, you know, learned about budgeting and finances in high school, but it's not. I think it's lacking. Our education for our future generation is very poor, in my opinion. But not only just the education, but I also noticed that investments are very private among friends. No friends, or at least none of our friends or even our clients' friends, really talk about finances. I think it's more, you know, would they judge you differently if they knew how much money you have? I mean, I think we all know of our friends who is better financially than others, but we're not really talking about investments or finances. Among family members, I would say it's even more private. And I think it's because the fear that if somebody knows that you have money, would they be asking for it? I know if you tell somebody you have money, will they want you to gift it to them? And then the fear with that is, are you teaching your children to live beyond their means? And there are some negatives with that. You know, and also when you are working and working and working, you think the money that you make is really for your benefit. You don't want to have to share it with other family members. It's, I put in that effort. I've accumulated it. I want to use it for me.
Right.
So what's also kind of another personal story real quick, my son, who is a freshman in high school, asked me, Dad, how much money do you make? Okay, so I looked him in the eye and I said, Trey, I make $1. And he looked at me and he said, Dad, I'm pretty sure you make more than $1 per year in income. And I was, you know, and the reason why I didn't want to tell him is I knew that if I asked, if he had told him the truth, he would ask for more money, just like his mom, you know. Right. So at that point, you know, you don't want to disclose to a 15-year-old how much money do you make. But then I asked myself, at what age should you disclose to a family member or a child, you know, your real financial situation? You know, if he was more mature, if he was more self-sufficient, or if I had health issues, or if I was retired and I want to become less active in the investments, maybe at that point I should get involved, or you know, I should let him get involved with more of the finances in retirement.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a tough one. I thought the birds and the bees was a tough one, but this that's another good one. I'm not sure I'd be ready for that conversation. So like, when do you see, I know we're trying to kind of tie this into the experiences we feel here in the office, and what do you see clients like becoming less active or less involved in their money?
Okay. So from my own experience, I'm noticing 75 years or older. At 75 years or older, I think that's when you realize, you know, for a lot of our clients, you're not going to run out of money, that you are more content. You know, you're at 75 years or older, you're traveling less, you're spending less money. I think you want more of a simple lifestyle. You want less changes. I almost say you're starting to care less. I definitely see at 75 years, you're less engaged. Things start falling through the cracks. Investments start getting titled incorrectly. You're less motivated to reduce your taxes. You're less motivated to look for opportunities. I found that living trusts are neglected. There are usually no one's looked at them for 5 or 7 years. I've also seen the investments being neglected. You know, what's interesting from this markets and the stock market increase since 2009, that aggressive investments have clearly done better than the conservative investments. And when aggressive investments have performed so much better, you know, the clients are ending up being more aggressive because they perform so much better. So if you had 50% of your money aggressively and 50% of your money conservatively, it may end up being 75% aggressive, 25% conservative. So we've noticed people are just becoming less engaged with their investments. I've even seen beneficiary forms not even filled out with the computer changes and all of the environments with the internets and the technology. Some computer databases change with financial institutions and they realize that there are not even, all of the data hasn't been transferred. So as a result, we've seen beneficiary forms just not even filled out. And I also think that when you're becoming less engaged or less active, future problems arise. And someone could actually use a trusted person would be ideal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you were definitely the trusted person in your family, and that right. naturally fell in your lap. As I said, your family's very fortunate for that, but sometimes we don't have a family member. Sometimes we look to third-party institutions. So I know a lot of financial institutions are starting to ask clients about a trusted person or a trusted contact. What is a trusted person, and when should you start looking for one?
Okay, so this is a new, hot topic in the financial world. Financial institutions right now, there's this rule called 4512 just came out that basically says that financial institutions are allowed to share your financial information with a third party in case of emergencies or certain circumstances. And these certain circumstances could be health issues like Alzheimer's or dementia. And then there's another rule, 2165, which permits the financial institutions to allow disbursements of funds to be placed on hold because somebody is getting taken advantage of financially, which is kind of an interesting, you know, stories and so forth, because we've had clients that literally were taken advantage of. Some of our clients who lose a spouse, and they're, we call them the widow, really misses being married, wishes that companion. And I've seen clients, you know, have these relationships overseas with somebody online, and they tell them how much they love them and they miss them and that they can be, they would love to join them and they just need money to do this. So I've seen clients get taken advantage of that way. I've also seen children take advantage of their parents. They weren't just trying to help their parents, but I've also seen children help themselves, not just help others. So, you know, a trusted person is really somebody that the financial institution can really talk to, and for your benefit, they are trusted, so we can talk to them. It's different than a successor trustee. A successor trustee in a living trust is usually the person who pays your bills, disperses your money, and so forth. A trusted person, I would call it before that. It's somebody that the financial institution can really talk to, that they feel that it is safe to talk to that person. And if that trusted person calls the financial institution, that, you know, the financial institution can openly talk to that trusted person on that client's behalf. Once again, I think at age 75, you may want to look for a trusted person. It is really somebody you trust. A lot of the times it could be a child or a family member that is somebody you may want to trust. It could be a beneficiary, usually not a charity. The financial institutions are not going to want to talk to a charity because there's conflicts of interest. It could also be a friend. It doesn't even need to be a beneficiary or a family member. You know, it's really somebody you feel that could talk to you. I almost would say it's, if you're going on a major cruise and you have no internet, you have no cell phone, who would you give your checkbook to? Who would be that person you truly would trust that will pay your bills? And you could also say on, you know, if you're signing up for an airplane or a ticket, you know, who's that emergency contact in case of emergency, your plane goes down, who would you want to contact you? Or for us to contact that person. So that's basically a trusted person is really somebody you trust that openly can talk to the financial institutions with.
Wow, yeah, these are tough topics for sure. And like you said, they're not easy to initiate. So what would be some, like as a first step, what would be an example of information you would want to share, some basic information you would want to share with a potential trusted person?
Okay, so if you, let's say you have a trusted person and you want to just go with basic information only, I would say there's no harm in giving business cards. You know, the business cards, personal contact information from your for your estate planning attorney, your financial institution's business card, your tax person, life insurance, your doctors, healthcare providers, all of those. I mean, given a contact information, I would say is definitely safe. Giving them that information, even advanced directives, you know, going over in case something were to happen to you, when do you want to be kept alive? Those topics can also be discussed. Even a power of attorney forms, you know, who's going to be that successor trustee? Maybe go over that trusted person and just go over the basic information. And if you want to dig a little bit deeper and say, if I passed away, you know, what do I want to do? I mean, do I want to be buried? Do I want to be cremated? Where do I want my ashes to be dispersed? And I would also say, if you have any special jewelry or personal items that you want to specifically given to somebody, sharing it to a trusted person that says, you know, that trusted person, I would really want this jewelry to go to this person. I would call that phase one. If you truly can find a trusted person, can you provide the basic information is what I would probably do.
Sounds good. Sounds like a good start. I mean, sometimes those types of questions, they seem really hard, but when you get into them, you can kind of work through them. Yep. And then start to move to the next step. So what if you feel really good about this person and then you want to educate them more about how to get involved? What would be like the phase two, I guess?
Okay, so assuming that you have a trusted person and you want to educate them more, I would say the first step is maybe introduce your financial advisor to that person. Really start educating them on your investments. This is when you become more transparent. I would say in this phase two, you're discussing your net worth. You're going over all of your investments. You're disclosing your living trust. You're giving them a copy of your living trust. And you're going over the living trust and your intentions of what you would want to happen when you pass away. Who is going to be your successor trustee and how should they disperse the money to the beneficiaries? Do you want to keep it within the family? Do you want to give it to your children's spouses? Is that something you really want to do? Or do you want to just keep it within the bloodline? You know, kind of strategize or at least educate them with it. You know, maybe add them to your financial advisor's mailing list. Invite them to a seminar. Give them some educating material. Give them copies of your newsletters or let your financial advisor start mailing the newsletters to them directly. But I would say, if you can truly educate them, can you create a plan and make sure you're both on the same page? If you could do that, I think you're definitely ahead of the pack.
Yeah, many steps forward. So in terms of strategizing, and especially if the person is a beneficiary, let's say, what are some ways you can strategize with your trusted person and maybe go and I guess maybe into a phase three and go a little bit further?
Okay, so if you can give full transparency and you want to strategize with them, this is the ideal circumstance. This is when you really start getting involved. This is when you start understanding more about that beneficiary circumstances. So I would say at that point, what are the tax brackets of the beneficiaries? Are they in the 32% brackets? Or you know, versus, let's say, if the owner of the investments are at a 12% brackets? So if the beneficiaries are in a higher tax bracket than you, should the owner start converting to a Roth IRA? Because that Roth IRA would be received to the beneficiaries tax-free. And that tax-free to the beneficiaries when they're in a 32% bracket definitely keeps more money within the family, less money to the IRS. Also, we have noticed that not all beneficiaries are in the same tax brackets. Sometimes you see a beneficiary in a high bracket and another beneficiary in a lower bracket. Should that beneficiary that's in a high bracket be 100% beneficiary of the Roth IRA versus somebody who's in a lower bracket might be a beneficiary of the IRA account? And you can weight those averages to make it 50-50 within the beneficiary form. So there's definitely ways you can do that. If a beneficiary is very successful and you might want to skip a generation, sometimes what you might want to do is not give the money to a child, but give it to the grandchildren of that child to skip that generation. You have to be careful with the generation skipping tax, but you know, there's definitely strategies with that. And then also, do you want to protect your money from creditors and spouses or another strategies? Or you might realize that the beneficiaries are financially well off, that you should spend more money during your own lifetime. So while the owner is still alive, should you be spending the money and not even leave anything to the children? So at least you understand that financially. Or should you start gifting money now because your beneficiaries do need more money now versus later? But, you know, once again, you don't want to teach them bad spending habits while you are alive. And, you know, we want to leave more money to the beneficiaries and not to the IRS. Also, I would say strategizing today could teach your kids or your grown adult children good financial habits. Teach them to save now versus spending later. Now, if you want to use a third party like a financial institution, you could keep things more confidential if that adult child doesn't want you to know all about their finances. Mm. But, you know, do you get a financial advisor involved or not? That's entirely up to you. But at the end of the day, this strategizing is the best strategy if you have a trusted person you can do that with.
I feel like a lot of this falls in line with our internal philosophy of proactive versus reactive. And yep. a lot of this you had to do kind of reactively for your own family. Yep. And so it's really about getting ahead of it while you can, right? And I think that's, so as people are kind of weighing out their own risk benefit around, should they add a trusted person? Yep. What would be the downside?
Okay, so I would say the first downside with a trusted person is they're going to know you're not 100% broke. There is no way you could get a financial institution involved if you have no money. The second thing I would say is, how much do you want them to be involved with your finances? Do they have the time to help you? You know, a lot of these trusted people have their own life. They might not have the time or the desire to do it. And then the lastly is, do they have the expertise? If they don't have the expertise, can you go to a financial advisor to help them and educate them and bounce ideas off of each other? I also would say it would be definitely harder to make changes to that owner, to that 75-year-old person, because once you get the trusted person involved and you teach them everything, changing everything immediately after is a lot more difficult. You want to make sure everyone's on the same page, that you are on the same page both today and in the future. And then lastly, you know, how much do you want that trusted person to give financial input? Sometimes they might be giving you advice that you don't even want. So you have to also be careful that getting somebody involved, they might give opinions, and you have to be willing to at least listen to their opinions as well.
Absolutely. So you mentioned kind of a sweet spot of like 75 years old. Being an adult child myself, is that about the range you kind of recommend that we start initiating?
Yeah, I mean, right this second, 75 years, we just once again realize people are less engaged. It could also be earlier if you have health issues. I guess the question is, when do you anticipate yourself becoming less engaged?
So what are next steps? What do you think we should be doing to go down this path? What would you recommend? I know you gave a good first step in some of the basic questions we'd want to get answered. And then we kind of went through all the phases, but what's a quick rundown of the steps we can go through?
Okay. So, I guess the steps at this point would be, number one, do you have a trusted person, and can you figure out a trusted person? If there's somebody that knew everything about you financially, could you truly trust them? I would say listen to this podcast, you know, have somebody listen to the podcast and get involved with it. You know, have a discussion of what involvement do you want that trusted person to be? Do they have that time? Do they have the desire and the expertise? Do you want to give them just basic information? Do you want to educate them and be more open and honest? Do you want to be strategizing with them in the future? Do you want to use a third party? Do you want a financial advisor to help? You know, or do you want to keep things more confidential? Bounce ideas off of each other. You know, having that third party could be a helpful if you have one. Obviously, we're here to help if you need that. But I would say make sure you come up with a plan. You know, what's also kind of interesting is what happens if you're the reverse? Meaning, what happens if you're the child and your parents are 75 and 80 years old? When do you get step in and get involved with it? You know, that's something that's also very difficult, because as a child, you know, when do you intervene? When do you do that without looking like you're the money hungry child looking for finances and you're truly just trying to help? I would say the first step, if you're a child looking for a parent, is, does that parent, are they paying attention? Is that parent involved with their own finances? Is somebody looking at their investments and taxes? Do they have a financial advisor that's just giving investment advice? Are they truly trying to, you know, answer questions they didn't know to ask? Are they trying to strategize and reduce taxes? Or is it just filling out the tax return? Is their investments to risk too high? You know, if they're neglecting their investments and they're a buy it and hold forever, you know, I've seen clients own a stock forever. Is that something that they're going to be doing? I would also say, you know, is your parent becoming more forgetful or disengaged? Do they have inappropriate cash flows? Is their living trust basically not up to date? You know, and I would also say, if you have a parent that's a do-it-yourselfer, and what I mean by do-it-yourselfer is they're doing their own investments, they're making their own investment decisions, they're doing their own tax returns, are they right now, you know, if they're over 75 years or older, when do you become involved? Because so many times have I seen the do-it-yourselfer health start to diminish and they start forgetting. And what we have seen is the classic example is the do-it-yourselfer's spouse has no involvement whatsoever. And when they have no involvement and the owner is, you know, having health issues, we've seen clients forget to do tax returns. For 7 years, no tax returns done because the do-it-yourselfer forgot to do it and started losing their capacity. We've seen do-it-yourselfers neglect all their investments, neglect their properties. Their renters are taking advantage of them. The property managers are taking advantage of them. You know, it's just, you know, when do you get that intervention? And then the do-it-yourselfer loves doing it themselves. How do you get involved without really ticking off your parents? And, you know, it's almost like you're getting so much involved, you're going to be written out of the will. I mean, I've seen so much dynamics, and maybe at that point you should get a third party involved and say, you know, I'd rather that third party be upset, you know, that owner be upset at the third party than I would at the beneficiary. Right. So there's a lot of touchy topics, but at the end of the day, here's what I, my honest opinion. Number one, if you can identify a trusted person, that is better than having no one. If you can identify a trusted person, it is better to provide basic information than it would just to identify. Now, if you can provide the basics, it's even better to educate them than it is just to provide the basic. And lastly, it is better to strategize is the ideal circumstance. So if you're asking me in my opinion, the best case scenario, strategize with that trusted person. So at the end of the day, when you know when you pass away, not all your money is going to be taken with you, you're going to be leaving this earth with that money. You might as well do the best thing for you, your family, and everyone else.
Absolutely. Well, as always, you give us a lot to think about, and we appreciate you. It sounds like I need to probably schedule a meeting with you. I think I need a trusted person. We really appreciate this, Rob. It's been a great first podcast, a lot of great information to share with everyone. I do want to mention one thing. If you have ideas for future podcasts, we would love to hear them. You can send those to connect@planningyoucantrust.com. Thank you again, Rob.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a pleasure.